Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Zach Seiko. Zach, how are we doing this week?
Hey, we're doing very well, Jim. It's Penn State USC, and it's the turning point of the season, right? We get a better understanding of how good this Penn State team actually is.
Yes, I think from the offseason, we've been pointing to these next several weeks. Before we get started with the Penn State football, I just want to a shout out to our listeners who are down south in Florida specifically. I know we've got a lot of listeners down there, Zach. They're facing a huge storm, Hurricane Milton, coming in. I hope you all get to a safe spot and take care of yourself. I know I've got a lot of relatives down there, so our thoughts are with you. All right, not a good segue, but let's get back to the Penn State football. Let's start with this game from last weekend Zach. Seems to be a trend now, these slow starts to games. We saw it again against UCLA. I don't think the game was ever in doubt, but it was certainly another slow start, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a slow start, and frankly, this has been going on all season long, actually. You look at West Virginia, Bowling Green, Kent State, Illinois, and now UCLA. It's like, okay, some are more egregious than others, but it's been a slow start offensively week in, week out. And yes, that includes West Virginia. That was a slow start in the first quarter. They trailed Bowling Green at half. Now, that was a little more on the defense, but the offense still had to play catch-up and come from behind. And against Kent State, you know, it kind of took some time late in the first quarter. Illinois, that's the best team that they played to date. And they still, here's the good part of this, Jim, is that the offense eventually figures it out. Whether it takes a whole first quarter, even more so a whole first half, Penn State's offense does find rhythm just after a drive or two. And I think we should see that again against USC, because this is still a new offense. Okay, you still have new players like a Julian Fleming in there. This offensive line is, even though these players have been with the team, it's the first time they've all played together against actual opponents. So it's not going to doom them against USC. However, I wouldn't be surprised if we see that one more time. And then the turn, I actually talked about this previously on my show, Locked On Nittany Lions, that the bye week, that second bye week, is going to be so helpful for the offense to continue developing that chemistry, that symmetry. You just need more reps to work together. And then we'll see the offense clicking, not for just portions of the game, but the entirety of the game. So the better days for Penn State's offense are still ahead.
What's interesting looking at these is trying to find the trend, trying to find the cause of it. You point out a lot of new things, new offense with the new coordinator, but that's something all teams deal with. You know, we mentioned Bowling Green. That's a new quarterback they bring into their system, changes everything, changes the constant in college football. Can you find any common thread through these games? For example, I'll point out the UCLA game. I felt that Drew Aller started a little bit slow. Missed on a couple passes early. Penn State was 0-for-2 on third downs early. Then converted on their next six third down plays. And by the end of the half, that last drive, when they started with, what, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes to go, they just put the ball in Drew Aller's hands, and he found rhythm, marched him right down the field after one incompletion. He completed five passes in a row, Zach. So that I could look at the UCLA game and say, well, maybe that's a little on Drew Aller. But is there a common thread through the first five games?
So Drew had a perfect game, essentially, against, or a better game that anybody could have asked for against UCLA. I thought he made all the right decisions. The only true mistakes that he did have were early in the game? And who are those incompletions, those drive stallers? Who are those passes to? Oh, go figure, Julian Fleming, the only receiver that he hasn't played with through the past season. And who's been there? So Trey Wallace has been there. Amari Evans has been there with Drew Aller for the longest time. Tyler Warren. All of those guys have built up chemistry and timing. So everyone will say, oh, Drew Aller's one of the most inaccurate quarterbacks in college football just because there's a group of people in college football that like to just purely hate on Drew Aller. If he makes a mistake, it's because he can't do it. That is a timing issue, okay? So for Julian Fleming, and that's just a communication issue. Andy Kotelnicki's system is complicated. So these receivers, more or less, will from time to time have option routes. And Julian Fleming, on the one play, it's a deep dig where he runs about 10, 15, maybe even 20 yards. I can't remember how far he was upfield. And then he cut to the inside. That is a dig. Instead, Drew Aller thought that he was going to see zone and Fleming was going to sit instead of cutting to the inside, he was just going to plant and stay. And that's where Drew Aller throws the ball behind him. Drew Aller's not that grossly inaccurate. It's the fact that Fleming thought he was going inside and Aller thought he was going to stay put, and that's why that ball is incomplete. So that takes time, that takes reps, that takes practice, and that's just a breakdown in communication among two college athletes that just haven't played a lot of football together. But that is just going to continue to get better. So allow this team, even though we're getting into game six, just give them a bit of a grace period here. Because the offense, like I said, the better days are ahead. They still need to get adjusted to Kotelnicki's system, timing, all of these things. Same thing with the offensive line. The offensive line is still more or less brand new. That's going to take time. And again, better days are ahead. It's not going to get worse. It's going to get better.
It's interesting you mentioned the offensive line. I think overall they've been pretty good. The other thing, yes, there are some people who are critical of Drew Aller. I really don't understand.
It's just because they can. I don't understand it either, because it's not a rationale thinking that he's inaccurate. He can't make any throws. The dude can chuck a football 80 yards effortlessly. He's got the perfect build. The only thing, yes, if you want to say that he has a confidence issue or from the previous season, because I think he's better at it in 2024. He seems a lot more sure of himself. He was 19 last season, starting his first full year of college football. Now, yes, that's more or less an excuse, but at the same time, Jim, Drew, it wasn't this five-year veteran making these mistakes, and he still played good football, 25 touchdowns to two interceptions. Drew has gone to another level with Andy Kotelnicki in the second year. So to say that the same issues have failed him, do I see like similar tendencies from time to time? If there's a little bit of pressure, do his feet get choppy? Does he make an inaccurate throw sometimes? Yes, but 9 times out of 10, when he makes an inaccurate throw, quote unquote, for the audio listeners, it's because Drew is protecting the football and sees, okay, the defender is going to make a play on this if I put it here, but if I kind of just throw it away, then we live to fight another down. Like, Drew Aller is very good at continuing drives and protecting the football. I think he makes very good decisions, and he can throw the football anywhere he wants to.
Well, the fact is, Zach, in this game where he was not accurate, I'm doing the air quotes here also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He completed 70% of his passes.
Exactly.
So I think that the criticism is left over from a year ago when some of those issues existed.
It's just lazy. And I don't think people want to admit that they're wrong. So this preconception that Drew Aller's a bad quarterback, that he's a future NFL bust, NFL franchises can't wait for Drew Aller to enter the draft, and for good reason.
And I also think that this team has been built around the running game, at least so far, but I'm intrigued by that last drive of the first half where they said, look, we've got to go 80 yards in 2.5 minutes. We can't do this methodically running the ball down the field. Okay, Drew, here's the ball. Get us downfield. Mm-hmm. What did he do? Boom, boom, boom. He was 5 for 6 for 72 yards. On that particular drive, exactly. Zach. So, and they were a couple. He can make some very special passes that I think he does not get enough credit for. Let's look at a couple other things. Let's look on the receiving side of this. Before the season started, we were told that Trey Wallace, Liam Clifford were separating themselves from the other receivers. Mm-hmm. We had been waiting to see Liam Clifford. Was this that breakout game for him, Zach? Three catches over 100 yards.
Absolutely, and he just had his first career touchdown not too long ago. This is the fruits of your labor. You are seeing this with Liam Clifford because you're not going to find a lot of players that are going to outwork Sean Clifford and Liam Clifford. You might have their criticisms and say, okay, well, Liam doesn't do this well, or in the past, Sean didn't do this well, but you are never going to find a teammate, an opponent, somebody that's going to outwork the Clifford brothers, and that is what we're seeing now come to fruition with a Liam Clifford. Liam just adds to the dynamic ability of the passing offense. So you already have Tyler Warren, the most complete tight end in college football, and that's not an opinion anymore. That's just about darn near fact at this point. Trey Wallace has the athleticism. He's been quiet, Jim, because they don't really need him to have that big kind of game. Amari Evans is taking this offense to where it needs to go in terms of, okay, well, Penn State's offense is good, but if it wants to be great, if it wants to be potentially elite, which I still think is on the table through the final stretch of the season, Amari Evans is that key because he is the explosive play. He has the explosive playmaking ability. Well, now it's Liam Clifford with the 50-plus yard catches here, and Liam, early in the season, I think preseason, he was dealing with some bumps and bruises, never figured out the severity of it, but that is going to hold you back and probably keep you from having a quick start to the season. And now that I think that he's in rhythm himself, that just only adds to Tyler Warren, Trey Wallace, Amari Evans. It's not just comprised to one or two guys. You take those guys away and Penn State's passing game can't do anything. Oh, and I didn't even mention all three of the running backs, Singleton, Allen, that also includes true freshman Quentin Martin, that can go out and catch a pass and line up as a receiver, not just like a dump pass out of the backfield. They can line up in the slot against a defensive back, a linebacker, and probably win that matchup.
And Zach, I hadn't thought about it till you kind of brought it up, that when you hear the receiver with the most receptions is three, you say, well, that's not a very big number. But they had four different guys with three receptions in this game. That's spreading the ball out. That's not allowing the defense to focus on one player only. You have various targets to use. So Liam Clifford having a breakout game just adds to the number of targets. All right, that's it for quarter number one. Quarter two, we're going to ask Zach about USC. Stay tuned for that.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Zach Sako. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. We were reviewing Penn State UCLA. Now it's time to turn the page. Another West Coast team, USC. The difference is Penn State is traveling out there this time. Zach, one of the things missing in the UCLA game was Nick Singleton. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm stating the obvious, that changes the running game quite a bit. Catron Allen does what Catron Allen does. But you lose that explosiveness, of course, that you get from Nick Singleton. You heard James Franklin this week. Seems like all indicators are we're going to see Nick Singleton on the field this week.
And he could have played against UCLA from what it sounds like, but as a precaution, they held him out. At the end of the day, we don't even know what's actually wrong. We just know that he was unavailable or his availability wasn't to the fullest. So Franklin, and again, surprisingly, I think because there's of no concern here, do you notice how James was pretty open and honest about the availability? Like, we don't get, oh, well, KJ Winston didn't practice today, or KJ Winston was held out here, and he saw the trainers this day. James went day by day. Hey, Nicholas Singleton did not practice on Tuesday, did not practice on Wednesday. He was available in a limited status on Thursday. Same thing, was limited in practice on Friday. And I thought he was ready to go on Saturday, but Jay Onesider came to me and said, hey, Singleton's not going to play. And that was just right before, not necessarily right before, but leading up to kickoff. James had no idea that Singleton wasn't going to play. That was Sider coming to him and saying, I think it's best that Singleton is out and we have Catron Allen and Quentin Martin. Look, Singleton wasn't needed against UCLA, but you saw just how different the offense looked. And thank goodness that the passing game was kind of able to bail out the running game. But UCLA's defense is not that good, and particularly the pass defense. But I thought just kind of down the stretch, the run game would eventually kind of break one off, Catron Allen or Quentin Martin. And they both had average days. They did enough. So Penn State does need Nick Singleton back for USC. You can't afford to not have Singleton for that game, especially when this is the first big road trip. This is the first. It's not only just the toughest opponent that Penn State's playing. Penn State only had to go to West Virginia to this point and then play Bowling Green at home. Bye week, Kent State, and then Illinois at home, and now UCLA at home. They haven't gone anywhere else. UCLA was interesting because, okay, this was a 9 a.m. game for them Pacific time. They played at noon. Fox didn't do them any favors. However, UCLA has been all over the place traveling, so they're used to it. They've been to Hawaii, then they got to fly back to LA. Then they've been to LSU, then they got to fly back to LA. They've been everywhere across the map, and it's only going to continue to get worse for them. Penn State, this is the first time that they really got to pack up, wheels up, and go somewhere.
Yes, I think that's been a concern of Penn State fans since the schedule was announced for this year, just going out to the West Coast. And I think I have my numbers right, where they said in the Big Ten, any team that's had to cross two time zones, yeah, they're 1-8. Okay, so again, that's still a pretty small sample size, but it's starting to become a trend. I think we'll find out more this weekend, because it's not just Penn State going out to USC. We also have Ohio State going out to Oregon this weekend, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough matchup for both teams. I mean, you're getting a 2-3 with Ohio State and Oregon. USC is no longer ranked, and I think it's justified. And look at USC. We're talking about these cross-coast matchups. Sure, USC didn't go all the way across the country, but even those road trips to Michigan, Minnesota have proven to be daunting. And is that because USC is dealing with a little bit of jet lag, or is it because they don't match up well with those teams? If it's the case that they don't match well with those types of teams, okay, so what does Michigan do? They like to run the football and play sound defense. What does Minnesota like to do? Well, it's because they have to do it. They have to rely on sound defense and run the football because there's not much else they can do. That's just the nature of the system. But Penn State can do those things too. Jim, if not enough people are paying attention right now, Penn State has a top five defense nationally, not in the Big Ten, nationally, when it comes to yards per play allowed. They are top five in the nation. And then the offense, if they need to, can go power run football. We saw that against Illinois, that Penn State dictated the terms of the game. They ran the football. They ran Brett Bielema's game plan right at him, and it worked. And they won by 2 touchdowns. So in this case of this matchup, USC is going to have to deal with the blueprint's been set by Michigan and Minnesota. Penn State can execute the same type of blueprint against USC. However, I am concerned about that jet lag because Penn State has not had this kind of trip yet to date.
And USC, in talking about the team, they have shown, and I was looking at some PFF Pro Football Focus numbers, mm-hmm, they are not good at the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball, Zach, are they?
No, they're not. Offensive line, selectively in spots, they have good players. Watch Abdul Carter and Deny Dennis Sutton. Those guys could have a big day for Penn State. I'm also looking to the other side of the football. Okay, so you brought up the offensive line. You said that they've been pretty good. Are they performing above expectations? Yes. Are they good, great, elite? Unfortunately, no. But what helps out Penn State is that the offensive line still is better than what USC's defensive line is going to throw at them. So unless De'Anton Lynn is going to throw a bunch of exotic blitzes and everything, and that's where the running backs help and Drew Aller's veteran awareness, right? The USC defensive line won't be able to get after the quarterback very frequently on its own. It's going to take some blitzes. It's going to take some design schemes to basically try and trick Drew Aller. But good luck finding somebody that studies the game and understands at least the film, the X's and O's, more than Drew Aller's. If you want to criticize, you know, okay, he can't make this throw or he does this wrong, that's fine. But when it comes to the film room and understanding how to read a defense, you are not going to find anybody on Penn State's sideline better than Drew Aller as a player.
The other part of this concern, you brought up the, it is the travel to West Coast that I think has concerned all of us leading into this season. And James Franklin, I think what he will do is when there's special circumstances like a travel, or when we saw the rain interrupting a game and the lightning storm at Michigan State, he then adds this to his plan. I think he's been preparing for this for a while, and it's starting with they're going out a day early, correct? They're going out on Thursday instead of Friday?
Yeah, and I mean, that does help. They are going about it a bit early. They're also flying out of Harrisburg because the State College Airport apparently can't accommodate the flying needs that they have. I think any additional time that you can gather is beneficial. But this isn't like, it's just difficult. It's difficult to account for because the last time Penn State even went out to the West Coast like this in the middle of the season was under Joe Paterno. We haven't seen even a James Franklin team really attempt this yet. So not only are these college athletes, and the records back it up across the board, 1-8 when it comes to cross-coast travel. It's difficult, and it's something that needs to be accounted for, and that's why it's reflected, because on paper, Penn State is a touchdown, maybe even 10 points better than USC if this was on a neutral site. And I'd have 99% confidence if USC was coming to Beaver Stadium that Penn State would win by two touchdowns. But this game that Penn State is going to have to play full four quarters with on limited rest, on the travel, jet lag's a real thing. And USC, I think, is going to be, you know, USC's backs are against the wall as well. They are against the wall because they are 3-2. They were number 11, and now they're unranked. They got a bone to pick, and Penn State is the perfect team to try to revive the season so that they can get back in the college football playoff conversation. There's a lot staked here for the Trojans, too.
There is a lot, and you kind of beat me to the punch. I was going to ask you about USC's attitude going into this game, because I think it can go either way. It could be, hey, our backs are against the wall. This is our last best shot. We beat Penn State, and we could conceivably be back into the playoff conversation. Or is this, again, we're dealing with 18 to 22-year-olds here, Zach. It's not unusual for some of these teams, all of a sudden, two losses, a couple losses, and a coach could start to lose a team also. So which way are we going to see this USC team go?
Well, Miller Moss is still a new starting quarterback. This is his first season starting. He has developed under Lincoln Riley. They have lots of talent, and it's the best talent that Penn State has faced this season defensively. Miller Moss, the quarterback. Woody Marks, the running back. Marks especially has an NFL future. Jacoby Lane, Zachariah Branch, Deuce Robinson, all of those guys are elite playmakers. This is a group that I can't compare to anybody else. Maybe a little bit of Illinois. Illinois is certainly deep when it comes to its offensive weapons and had a pretty good receiving duo there. But guys that can just at any time explode for the big play, USC has that. Whereas West Virginia, Illinois, other comparable teams, at least in Power Four, don't have that kind of threat. USC's defense is the question mark, and it's looked better under Lynn, it's getting progressively better. So the same thing, it's like, okay, the true key to this, for this game, Jim, how far is Penn State's offense ahead and how far is USC's defense ahead? If Penn State's offense, more so under a new Andy Kotelnicki system versus a new DeAnton Lynn system at USC, whichever one's further ahead, that's going to decide the game.
All right. You tell me, which way is it? Let's get your prediction. We've got a minute left. Give me your prediction. And if you got it in you, how about a bold prediction for the game?
The bold prediction, that's, I think it is a little bit bold to say that. I think Penn State wins. I'm not as confident as I am in weeks past. And originally in the season, to begin the season, I said 10-2 overall. And I thought that loss was to USC. But USC kind of continues to set me back. Hey, Penn State's the better team. This is the bold take, that Penn State is a significantly better team than USC. But how are the road environment, climate, travel adjustments going to affect them? Can Penn State play a full four quarters of football? I think because they can do similar things to what Michigan and Minnesota did, that they will win, but it's going to be airtight. USC is going to give them a fight. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a 27-24 game and Penn State, hopefully Ryan Barker, that change to him, pays dividends here and Penn State's able to win on kind of a walk-off kickoff or kick, walk-off field goal.
If it comes down to that walk-off field goal, Zach, I'm not sure my heart can take that. All right, that is it for quarter number two. And Zach, coming in is Sean Gold. We'll do that right after this break.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold from Sean's Take. It's quarter number three of our show. Sean, what an absolutely insane weekend of college football.
Jim, this entire season has been crazy. It all got summed up last week. What a week. We've got a lot to talk about in these games. But man, was it fun to watch and was it surprising to watch?
It really was, and I had told this story earlier in the week. I was at a wedding this weekend, so I was on the road quite a bit, and I'm listening to the college sports show that's on satellite radio, and they were talking about, well, it's not a great schedule this week, and the other guys, you know, though, that's often the time that insanity hits, the crazy stuff, and sure enough, that happened. Now, we'll get to our picks that we made from last week, but I just want to ask you a little bit about this. It was insane. Four of the top 10 and actually five of the top 11 teams, Sean, lost, several of them to unranked teams. How does, when you look forward now to making picks, how does a weekend like this affect you? I mean, we didn't even look at Alabama, Vanderbilt, or Tennessee, Arkansas, because we didn't think those would be the great games of the weekend. And those teams go down to non-ranked teams.
Yeah, you know, it makes it really hard because you start second-guessing yourself. And we have a couple of those situations on our card this week that we're going to discuss in a little bit. And it really makes you think, what is this team? What is Alabama? They just beat Georgia. I'm feeling confident about them. I think I get a read on what this Alabama football team is, and then you go and lose to an unranked Vanderbilt team that, let's be real, is not a threat in the SEC to anybody. And all of a sudden, they beat the number one team in the country. So it just teaches us that anybody can win on any given Saturday. And we take some games for granted. And this past weekend showed us that there is no easy win anymore in some of these Power Five conferences.
There really isn't. And just to back up the numbers, say so for Vanderbilt, until this past weekend, Sean, they were 0-60 0-60 against top five teams. And then they take down number one mighty Alabama. It's crazy. And the same way with Arkansas, Tennessee. I think we were all believing that Tennessee had made that leap. They were part of that upper tier of the Southeast Conference, and they go down.
Well, they were, and it's funny. A couple weeks ago on my podcast, I talked about the top 10 teams in the country and what they had to do to get to the college football playoffs. And I highlighted big games coming up, like a Tennessee-Alabama game and what that could mean. I didn't highlight Tennessee-Arkansas. I marked that as a W for Tennessee to say, hey, you're going to have some big games down the stretch that you're going to have to beat these teams. And all of a sudden, when we look at playoff implications, this really hurts these schools. There's going to be some two-loss teams that get in, but, I mean, is Tennessee going to win out from here? Probably not. They have a difficult schedule. If they could have gone, you know, 6-1 to end the season, we'd be in a different conversation, but you lose to Arkansas, and that it kind of really diminishes your chance of getting to the playoffs. So these schools did not lock in properly this past weekend, and it's going to hurt them when that playoff committee gets together and decides the 12 teams that get in.
And all of those SEC teams, it changed that entire way we look at that conference now. Alabama with a loss, Tennessee with a loss. And by the way, Missouri, top 10, also lost. I thought they were a fraud, John. So them losing didn't come as a big surprise to me. But so many of these teams now have the unexpected loss. So I think that's going to really shift how we look at those teams. And just, well, we'll look at it now as we look at our picks from last week. The other two teams, Michigan and USC, who were ranked 10th and 11th, also lost. They were on our card from last week. Both of us, we were both 2-3. The reason why we didn't have a sixth game, there was a push. Clemson, FSU, we both had Clemson, and it landed right on the number that we used, which was 16 points. Going through the other games, we had the Missouri-Texas A&M game on our card. You took Missouri. I took Texas A&M. That was one I had. As I said, I had thought Missouri was a fraud, Sean.
Yeah, you completely nailed that game. That was over before it started. You know, I turned that game on a couple minutes late, and already Missouri's in a big hole there. And I think it's a really big win for Texas A&M. Their offense played probably the best it's played all season, and that's got to give them a lot of confidence. And as you said, you know, Missouri was definitely a fraud there. I was believing that they were kind of in that mid-tier of the SEC and had an outside shot. You know, if they got this win, they could lose a game later on and still make the playoffs. I would kiss their playoff chances goodbye for Missouri. And Texas A&M all of a sudden looking pretty good on the radar right now.
Right, and remember, their loss was out of conference, so that helps them as far as maybe getting into a conference championship game, but it does put them squarely back into the playoff picture. We mentioned Clemson and Florida State. We both had Clemson. I think the spirit of what we were looking for came through. Clemson dominated the game, but it ended up being 16 points. You and I both thought Penn State against UCLA would cover the 27.5 points. They didn't. Again, I'm wondering if the trend with this Penn State team is they play well enough to cover this spread, but it does not show on the scoreboard for them.
I agree, because that game was never in question for Penn State. And I regretted that pick every day after the show, just thinking, you know, 28 points is a lot, no matter what way you put it. And it actually, in the final 5 minutes, I thought we were going to get one of those James Franklin last minute covers, because Penn State was up by 22 points or whatever. And UCLA gets the ball. And I'm thinking, you know what? You get a stop. Penn State's going to want to score a touchdown here because they know what the spread's at and they want to cover that. And the defense just couldn't get off the field there. And UCLA put together a nice slow drive that chewed up the clock, and they scored a touchdown at the end, which also makes the final score look a lot closer than what it really was. UCLA never had a shot in that game. I would still say Penn State played a very good football game there, and I'm excited for this week against USC.
I'm with you. I think just like the Illinois game, they were good enough. The mismatch was large enough to cover the spread. The points did not reflect it. Let's go to Michigan, Washington. We both lost this one. We both had Michigan on it. I think we underestimated how bad Michigan is. It's not a great football team.
I completely agree. And as it got closer to Saturday, everything I started seeing about that game was in favor of Washington, and I really couldn't figure out why. I thought Michigan's defense was going to be good enough to get this win, and they would run the ball effectively enough. We know they can't pass the ball, but I thought their run game and defense would take over. And I think the biggest thing I learned about Michigan is that the defense isn't that good either. It's not what it was last year. They had a good offense with J.J. McCarthy last year and a great defense. They don't have a great defense anymore, and that really hurts this team when they have a bad offense. So, yeah, Michigan definitely dropping down on my radar.
And this is also going to be, you know, a theme as we look at another game from last week and look at the games coming up, is the teams traveling. You know, Michigan going to Washington, USC traveling to Minnesota. In this coming week, both Penn State and Ohio State traveling to the West Coast, and that we're finding in the Big Ten, at least, teams traveling at least two time zones are 1-8 so far. So it's a rough trip for these teams to make. So we'll see how things turn out, what our picks are going to be this week. I mentioned USC was at Minnesota. Maybe just like Michigan, we're finding out too. USC, not very good. To our credit, we both had Minnesota in this one.
We did, and you know, we both found this one to be a bit of a trap game, and it definitely was. Now, you know, I almost wish that USC won this game, though, because they're coming. You know, we got that Penn State game this week, and I would have liked to see Minnesota have won that game. I mean, USC have won that game, but yeah, I think we're learning something about USC, that the Big Ten is not the Pac-12. And they started the season out really hot, and they haven't looked the same since.
Yes, and I think there's the situation there that we're all guilty of, is that overreaction to one game. You know, Notre Dame beats Texas A&M, USC beats LSU. Those were the great week one games. And you find out, well, don't overreact. It's still 1 week, you know, and that's all it is. It's like us saying Alabama beats a wonderful Georgia team. The last thing in the world we expect is an upset against Vanderbilt of all teams. So that's craziness. The final game on our card last weekend, and you got to win on this one. You took Ohio State. I took Iowa. Ohio State was a 20.5 point favorite. My feeling was that Iowa would get up for this game. They would play well, did keep it competitive before things kind of went the other way in the second half. But I thought they could keep it within the 20. And, it was 7-0 at halftime, Sean. It was going just like I had hoped it would or planned it. And I just I underestimated how good Ohio State is, how bad Iowa is.
Yeah, no, like you said, at halftime, 7-0, it looked like everything you had talked about, and then Ohio State just starts to wear them down, and that's what these really good teams can do. I think there's two teams in college football right now that, at least at the moment, this can change in a couple days, that I trust is Ohio State and Texas. They play their brand of football. They don't try to do anything different. They don't try to get cute. And that's exactly what Ohio State did in the second half there. They just wore Iowa down, and they showed, we're the better team. We're going to come out here and dominate you. And they were able to do that despite Iowa being very much in that game at halftime.
And I think what we've also learned is having that good defense, not much of an offense, you could only ask your defense to do so much for you, Sean. And especially when you're up against a team like Ohio State, you could play an entire half, be within one score, but you know what? Ohio State could come out and start hitting on all cylinders, and all of a sudden they put up three scores in one quarter, and there goes everything you did for the entire first half. All right, Sean, that is a look back at last weekend. Coming up next segment, we look forward. We're going to get our Pulp Daddy picks.
And Sean, you know how we commented how difficult it was to travel multiple time zones? We have that with two Big Ten teams, both Penn State and Ohio State, traveling west. I'm real curious to see your picks.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sean Gold from Sean's Take. It's quarter number four of our show. That means it's time for our Pulp Daddy Picks of the Week. This is where we take a six-pack of games. Sean gives his picks. I give my pick also, for what that's worth. And let's see how we do. Sean, last week was not a great slate of games. It turned out to be really interesting with all those upsets. This week, we've got several really good games. Let's start with Texas-Oklahoma. This is now a Southeast Conference game, not a Big 12 game, and it's Texas is at Oklahoma. Texas is number one team in the country, and they are a two-touchdown favorite over Oklahoma. What do we see happening here?
You know, if last week taught us anything, it's that we should take every single underdog possible here. However, Quinn Ewers is supposed to be coming back this week for Texas, and it really doesn't matter if he or Arch Manning is starting this game. Both quarterbacks are elite, and both can lead this team to the promised land. I'm going to go with Texas here. I think they're the best team in the country. I trust Texas. And what I learned last week, too, is that I've got now major trust issues in college football because I thought I could trust Alabama. I thought I could trust some of these teams, and they all let me down. But I'm going to go with Texas here. I think they're just too dominant, and I think it could be a case where this game is close at halftime, but Texas really pulls away in the second half and just wears down Oklahoma.
Do you know what? I am affected by what happened this past weekend. I am. I'm looking at this, and I guess this is actually the Red River rivalry game, so they played on the neutral field, but it's Oklahoma, not a bad team, and you're giving them 14 points. To me, after what I've seen in the last week or so, I'm seeing a trend going on. I think for Oklahoma, this is their opportunity. This is their big game to say, you know what? We are still a factor in this playoff discussion. Any teams that are ranked highly, Sean, have to be on alert. I am actually going with Oklahoma in this one. All right, let's see. Next up, let's go with the Nittany Lions. We all know Penn State is traveling out west to play USC. The spread in this one is USC, a 5.5-point underdog. Penn State has been playing better than USC. USC, a disappointment so far. How do you see this game going, Sean?
Well, I was feeling good about it until you told me that stat in quarter three where these traveling teams in the Big Ten are not looking too good. However, I think Penn State is the better team here. I think this is on the calendar. Now, USC's gotten their welcome to the Big Ten against Michigan, against Minnesota, but this really was the game that everyone was looking at. Penn State, USC, we've seen the Rose Bowl matchups before, and now they're in the same conference. Penn State coming out west. I think they're the better team. I think this needs to be a statement win for Penn State. They're ranked the highest I've seen them, perhaps ranked in a very long time, in my lifetime, and Penn State needs to make a statement here. They cannot come in and lose to USC after cracking the top five. They got to show they're one of the best five teams in the country. I think they do that. I think they cover against USC. So I'm with you, Penn State fans, this week.
All right. Well, I'm going Nittany Lions also. And even though the last time they were ranked top five was a couple years ago, they travel to Iowa on the road. I think both teams were actually top five at the time. Penn State started quickly, something unusual for them this year, got the lead against Iowa. Sean Clifford was hurt, was injured, and everything went downhill from there. I think Penn State fans remember that. And I did give you that statistic on teams, Big Ten teams traveling multiple time zones. It's been an issue. I do think, though, that James Franklin is really preparing his team well for this. They're traveling a day earlier. They're heading out on Thursday instead of Friday. I think the fact that it's a 3 o'clock Eastern game helps Penn State. You know, the body clock kind of thing helps out there. I also think USC is just not very good. They have that big win against LSU, but since then, both lines of scrimmage, offensive line, defensive line, USC has not performed very well, Sean. And that strikes me that Penn State is the much better team. Not just better, but the much better. So a game where at the start of the season, I'm thinking this is another 10-2 season for Penn State, and this is would be one of the two games that they stumble in. I'm actually going with the Nittany Lions. And it's actually more of a statement about USC for me than it is about Penn State. All right, let's get our next game. Another Big Ten power team traveling to the West Coast. It's the Ohio State Buckeyes at Oregon. Last I saw, Oregon is a 4-point underdog here, Sean.
What a game. This might be the best Big Ten game that we have all season, and there's a lot of really good games on the calendar. Ohio State, Oregon. Ohio State has been doing their thing the entire year. Oregon started out slow. They've been heating up. They now look like one of the best teams in the country, and rightfully so. Number two versus number three in the end, Jim. I really like this Ohio State team. They may be the most talented team in the country, and that rivals this Texas team. I'm going to go Ohio State on the road to get this win at Oregon, cover the spread. It's going to be a great game, but I do think that Ohio State is that good to be able to overcome the travel and a great opponent and a great environment.
You know, prior to the season, Sean, this was looked at by many people as perhaps even the game of the year. These are two national championship contenders. Oregon, still undefeated. They're up to number three in the rankings. They're hosting it. We talked about that disadvantage of a team traveling the length of the country. I just don't trust this Oregon team. I really don't. As you pointed out, Ohio State just so talented. Again, just like I said for the Penn State-USC game, I think the talent disparity is greater than the traveling hindrance. So I'm going with the Buckeyes there also. All right, next game up. Interesting Southeast Conference game. It's Ole Miss at LSU. LSU is a 2.5-point underdog. This, Sean, I look at both teams have one loss, although LSU's loss is out of conference. I don't care. It's about making the playoffs. So each team with one loss, I get the feeling this is one of those playoff elimination games.
I completely agree with you, and what I'll say about this game is that LSU is now the 13th ranked team in the country. They have not looked like a top 13 team. I think they're ranked 13th by default because so many of these top 10 teams have been losing. So I think LSU is very overrated where they are in the rankings, and I really like this Ole Miss team. That offense is dangerous. I'm going to take Ole Miss in this one. I know it's on the road. I don't love that. But I think Ole Miss is the better team. I think they're a playoff team, and I don't think LSU is that good.
And I'm with you on this one. Ole Miss, disappointing loss but I still think that, yes, they are a playoff-type team, a playoff-caliber team, and I think only 2.5 points given to LSU. I think Ole Miss does. Maybe a close game. May end up being a field goal difference, but that's enough, Sean. That's enough. I've got Ole Miss. I'm with you on that one. All right, Sean, this next game, and for just to let folks know, when we decide which games to play, I'll often send Sean a list and he gets the veto opportunity or not. He's usually good about it. He will take the games that I put out there and say, yeah, sure, Jim, let's do those games. I don't think we ever pictured doing this game before the season started. It's Cal at Pitt. Yes, an ACC game. Cal doing a lot of traveling to get to Pitt. Pitt is a 3.5-point favorite.
Yeah, definitely not a game we would have typically taken. But when you sent me it, I even looked at it and I double-checked. And I was like, I'm excited about this game. This is a very interesting game. Cal should have probably beaten Miami last week. So, you know, we almost had another major upset for a top-ranked team. And meanwhile, Pitt just keeps chugging along. They're putting together a pretty good season. But nobody's really talking about this Pitt team too much. In this game, I'm going to take Pitt. As you mentioned, Cal has to do that travel. I think going west to east is more difficult than going east to west, so that benefits Pitt here. And also, I think Cal just played the game of their life against Miami. That loss, I think, is going to be really hard for them to overcome. And if they won that game, that was their season right there. That was the big upset that they had on their calendar. So I like the spot Pitt's in. I'm going with Pitt here, Jim.
It pains me to ever take Pitt, but I am also taking Pitt. I think a lot of the things that you pointed out, Cal doing the traveling, Cal coming off a very disappointing loss, a game that they probably should have won. The other thing with Pitt, if you haven't seen their quarterback play yet, you're in for a treat. The guy, very good. He was a transfer from Alabama. Very good player. He's changed that offense for Pitt. It's a completely different offense. I'm going with Pitt. It may pain me to say that. If they weren't Pitt, they are the style team I'd be rooting for. They are a fun team to watch. I'm going with Pitt in that one. Speaking of fun teams to watch, and this is no surprise that we take this, your Colorado Buffaloes. It's Kansas State at Colorado. And Sean, the Big 12 is just absolute chaos. It's chaos. And it feels like anyone could be anyone on any particular week. Colorado is getting 6 points at home against Kansas State.
Oh, you know, I love my Colorado Buffaloes here. Kansas State's a really, really good team, and they should probably win the Big 12. Jim, Colorado's looked good, and I'm very scared about this game, but I'm going to take Colorado at home, keep it close. If they can get this win, they have an actual shot at going all the way and making the college football playoffs. What a treat it would be to see this Colorado team squeak into the playoffs with all the media hype around them. So I don't know if it's the smartest pick in the world, but I'm going to go Colorado plus points.
You know what? I'm looking at this. I'm not the Colorado fan, but they've been good to me, Sean. And I'm looking at it like this is just craziness in that conference, okay? I feel like almost every game is a coin toss. So if it's a coin toss game, give me the team that's getting 6 points. I will take that. So I'm going along on the ride with your Buffaloes in this one also. All right, Sean, that is it for our show. A great set of picks. Fingers crossed for a good week this weekend, all right? That is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure that you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.